Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
All right, we're back with another show. The weather sucks.
The weather sucks, but now that we've done the weather, yep. That's all it gets.
That's it. That's all it gets.
This is a cool big week for comics.
We'd
had a few. I made a post on Facebook, and I was talking about how there's a new Carnage book. That Jason Aaron's got his Bug Wars book. The big thing at Marvel is
One World Under Doom
begins. And we got a bunch of like reprints and stuff. So
several of my favorite books have issues this week.
Yep. So that's kind of nice. And you know what? The other thing is though, we had some smaller weeks of comics, but there was some real gold in there.
Yeah, there was. Absolutely.
So not to knock the occasional small week. Our budgets
small weeks
need
are okay.
It. Our budgets need it, but it's nice to get a bigger one going on. And
everyone will find stuff like this week.
Yep. And then we will talk about movies and the theater and all the things later on.
Yes. And games.
That's right.
Because we are Rogues Gallery Comics and Games.
That is true. Games are allowed in here.
Yes. All right.
Speaking of, do we have any new games to report on?
We had a bunch of new games come in. Asmodee released a game called Treos, which is a fun thing. It says, on a stormy night, rumor spreads about a luck potion that one can buy for 20 gold coins in the black market in Treos. The realm is vast, its forest dark, and the roads dangerous. So you are...
You're trying to get a love potion?
You are four characters on a quest to turn their luck around forever. You're four asymmetrical characters, which means all of them have different abilities.
Yep.
You are trying to deal with highwaymen and other obstacles and outmaneuver the competition. You are couriers trying to get a luck potion to someone.
Interesting. That's such a weirdly specific premise, but like all of our games, half of our games are like that.
It looks like it's a tile-based map, and then you're like moving around.
Which is really cool.
I
like the premise.
I'm definitely curious. And then they released, I think, a million party games. I'm just going to run these down. A game called Mori, which is...
Like Memento Mori?
Use cards and dice to navigate a deadly forest.
Okay, yeah.
There's a game called Lunar. Game called Pies.
Okay, yeah.
Game called It's Bacon. All these are little tiny box like.
We were wondering if you were hungry when you were doing these orders.
Panda. I was hungry.
Nothing like a delicious
panda. A game called Fairy. Uh-huh. Panda is get those sleepy pandas into the perfect configuration of cards.
Amazing.
Yep.
By the way, is that fairy like fairy tales or fairy like a fairy across the river?
Fairy, like fairy tales.
Okay.
Game called Prey.
Okay.
That's Prey.
Okay.
Game called Rainbow. There's one where you're building, you're playing cards to score points. Those cards become the next round's points.
Okay. And these are either small games or party games?
Small games or party games. Yep. Game called Ultimate Breakfast Scramble.
Yep.
Game called Space Dogs Galactic Strike.
points for the name,
yeah,
for sure.
And then this one is not. This is from Arcane Wonders, not from Asmodee, but it's called Ito. It's a very popular game in Japan.
Okay.
I've actually played this one. It is a cooperative game where you and your friends get a secret number, and then you have to try to put it in order as a group based on the clues you get related to the theme. So, for example, you'll have a number card between 1 and 100, and then you'll get a clue that says famous people you would like to be, real or fictional. Would not like to be as a 1, would like to be as a 100.
Okay.
And then someone gives a clue.
Okay.
And then they put their number down, and then you put your numbers, and you're trying to guess. You're trying to guess, like, would you most want to be this person? Would you least want to be this person?
Oh, interesting.
And you're trying to figure it out. It's a really fun little party game.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah. One of the other possibilities is things you want to take a picture of. So it's a neat little party game and plays really quick to explain. And then they also had a game called Mazen, Mezen,
uh-huh,
which I've seen this one demoed last year. You're crafting paintings.
Okay.
And it's got tiles that flip, and so you're trying to flip and make a pattern on this 5x5 board.
Okay.
And when you flip a tile, it flips other tiles.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So fun little game. And then we also got the Pathfinder Guns and Gears, the new Pathfinder
second edition
remastered thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I assume that is kind of what it sounds like, an equipment sort of
it's
cool
got
book.
It's got rules for the gunslinger, it's got rules for their automatons, which are their warforged, yeah. Stuff like that, yeah. More gear type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we do still have the Dungeon Master's Guides.
Yep.
Although the limited cover is, as you expect, gone.
Yep.
Yep. Did we ever, like, get any of the other ones back in stock? Like, is there any chance that those will come back?
There's a possibility, but I think it's very unlikely, given that we were out here anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's talk about this big week of comics. Let's talk about One World Under Doom.
Yep.
Which I think is the big release this week.
No doubt.
They've been leading up to this for a while, since the end of Bloodhunt, which ended with Doom becoming Sorcerer Supreme. He sort of conned Doctor Strange into that.
Yep, he stole it.
It was
and
a cool development, though.
It
leads to my crazy Spider-Man theory.
This opens with Doom at the United Nations basically saying, hey, I rule the world now.
Yeah.
He's like, you are all Latverians now.
And then we see the Avengers meeting over it, and there's some confusion over as to exactly how he did what he did, whether he was using magic or coercing them or what, but they're just like, it seems like it has happened, like everyone basically signed off.
Yeah, well, it's funny, he starts off with universal healthcare and universal free education.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, kind of to Doom here. Like, I know he's a bad guy, but
you know, they have always kind of walked that line. In like, I remember Byrne in particular, John Byrne, when he was writing, he wanted to do a little bit of rethinking of Doom in the 80s.
Yeah,
and so there was those issues that would take place in Latveria, and you would kind of see like rules with an iron fist, but
they
honorable.
All love him, yes.
But they love him, yeah. By the way, just real quick, as I'm flipping through these first few pages. I couldn't remember if I knew this artist very well, but it's really nice art.
R.B. Silva, he worked on... Wasn't he also the Bloodhunt artist?
Yeah, but yeah. I think he did some of, like, the House of X.
Anyway, he's great.
Yeah, I was very impressed with his storytelling and his visuals on these.
But yeah, the Avengers and the FF get together, and they're like, what do we do about this? And they decide to launch... Baron Zemo... seems to, along with Hydra, have found a way to get through Doom's shield.
And they're like, do we take advantage of this and, like, try and get in ourselves?
Yep.
Or do we see what happens, kind of?
This entire first issue is basically, how smart is Doom?
Yep. And it turns out, pretty smart.
He's also smart.
Very powerful.
He's very powerful. But when you are the Sorcerer Supreme, you do have, right. Like...
Even when he's not the Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, yeah, like, there's a bit where they're like, hey, there's a barrier up around Latveria. Wanda, could you get through this? And she's like, maybe after a few weeks of studying it.
Yeah.
And she's like, today, though? No.
I do love that he's got Spider-Man and the Human Torch together. Those guys are always fun together.
Yep.
I also, Ryan North, who's the guy who writes
been writing
this,
Fantasy Four.
He's been writing FF. He's also written...
Squirrel Girl.
And apparently
is going to be in this.
Yeah, she shows up as well.
We've all liked the new FF to one degree or another, but Randy, I know you bonded most closely with it.
I really like it.
And it's like, you would probably say it's one of your favorite FF runs, right?
I might say it is my favorite FF run.
Okay. And so you've been... you're like, this guy... It's kind of like how Jed McKay... another writer we've been following for years and honoring with many a Jed McKay Tuesday.
Yep.
he kind of got his big Bloodhunt last summer, and this is now the time for Ryan North to get his big shot.
Yep.
With this crossover.
You know, I know we've talked about this. Everyone's always wary of crossovers. I feel like they have stopped doing them as big. Like, they do like one now. It feels like there's, like, one big one. Like, yeah, there's, like, the Venom Wars and that kind of stuff, but there's really just, like, one crossover a year now, it seems like.
Yeah, more or less.
Is this going to be... I actually don't know the extent of this one.
I think it's five or six issues, but it is crossing over to a bunch of stuff. There's some miniseries.
A lot of miniseries.
Yeah, there's there's Weapon X-Men, Doom Academy, Thunderbolts, Doomstrike, and I feel like there's at least... That's Doom's Division, which takes over the Asian Tiger Division and puts them under Doom's control. They're also launching a new Red Hulk book. They're also launching Doctor Strange of Asgard out of this. So there is going to be a pretty heavy crossover. But I believe you don't need to read, as with Bloodhunt, you could have read just the main series.
Right. And then you can like sort of, I think most people what they'll do is they'll read the main series and they'll kind of pick and choose, oh, well, do I like these characters in this?
Yeah.
Do I want to get a bigger picture read, you know, of all of this and invest in it? You know what I noticed is, like, Doom, like Magneto, two of basically maybe Marvel's two best villains.
Yep.
They're ones where people like to see these guys be badasses.
Yeah,
you know, you're like, we know that they are kind of overplay their hands, that they're like, but we kind of sometimes will find ourselves rooting for them. And I think this, I feel like Ryan North has a pretty good handle on that aspect of Doom.
Look, all I'm saying,
yeah?
I understand that Doom is a narcissistic fascist.
Yes.
I understand that I'm not supposed to like him.
And yet,
hashtag Team Doom. Now, hopefully in the next couple of issues, they will reveal that he is doing terrible things, and I'll be once again, oh, right, the Avengers are right.
Randy, I'm hashtag Team Hydra. Is that weird?
That's not good. don't do that.
Well, Hydra does get served up in...
They do. Yes, they do.
I was also surprised by Doom's new sidekick.
Yes, well, that comes from Ryan North's Fantastic Four.
Apparently so. I was not aware of it.
Yep.
I like it.
Yep.
We won't say too much more about that.
This was a great first issue.
He's got a pretty good handle on the other characters, too. Like, just in general, like, he hasn't been writing the Avengers. He's been writing FF.
Yep.
But his Avengers are pretty... I thought they were all pretty well written. There's some good some good Iron Man stuff.
I would not be surprised if North and McKay are talking to each other, because his Avengers really feel like McKay's Avengers.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. It's got great art. This is going to be a big thing for Marvel. I would say if you're a Marvel fan, you want to pick this up.
Yeah, agree.
The one I was surprised to enjoy, after y'all talked me into All New Venom, and I really liked it. There's an All New Venom number 3 this week. It's also it's really good.
It is another good issue.
I'm really enjoying All New Venom. We have all 3 issues in stock right now.
And
we have 1, 2, and 3.
The backstory of what Randy's about to say is, in general, none of us are big fans of the symbiote characters.
No.
We kind of are a little more old school in our Spider-Man bad guy love. And yet.
But we liked, like, Donny Cates' Venom to some extent,
right,
what he added.
Right. We will not spit upon Venom.
I like Venom more than Deadpool. However,
I will also say that we are fans of Charles Soule,
yes,
who is writing this.
Yes.
And this book is?
Eddie Brock, who was the host of Venom, is no longer attached to Venom.
Right.
Instead, he is like the Marauder. He's made up of 5 people.
don't confuse him.
No. Eddie Brock has the Carnage symbiote.
Yeah.
Which Carnage...
Apparently during, what, King in Black
King
or whatever?
It was the Venom War thing.
Venom War. They were both mortally wounded and had to kind of forge a bond between each other.
Yeah, because the Carnage symbiote was actually running around as just the symbiote.
Yeah.
He became so injured that he now has to have a host again.
Well, and the Carnage symbiote patterned itself with its serial killer host. So the Carnage is like the bloodiest of the symbiotes.
Yep. And so that is the kind of the hook of this is...
Eddie is trying to be a lethal protector.
Right. You know, and it has he knows how to deal with symbiotes. He's mentally warred with them and been allied with them and all this stuff over the years, and now here comes like the deadliest one of them all, and what can he do with it? This has a banger opening scene.
Yeah.
Where
him on the plane? What a cool idea.
Yeah. So he's just sitting there on the plane and you have his internal monologue going on, and his first thing he says, he's like, I have to kill someone on this plane.
Yeah.
And then like the Carnage symbiote thing pops up and he's like, do it now, Eddie, or whatever. And you're like, what is going on here? Is it just a random murder? And then there's like, you kind of start finding out there is something more going on.
Yeah.
And it's actually really interesting. It's very suspenseful. And by the way, who is the artist on this?
Jesus Sayas
he was
really good.
Killing it with it. Like,
yeah.
If you like that kind of detailed art, he's amazing on it. There's a sequence in it where it's kind of like on the mindscape, I guess, where Eddie Brock talks to Carnage, and Carnage's envision is this guy. And like this red Carnage bloody suit with like a hat on.
He looks like a big pimp.
He looks like a dapper 1940s pimp.
It's pretty great.
And he looks so cool. But there is also some, you know, classic Carnage.
He does not lose his bite.
Carnage.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, this is much more interesting than I thought. This sort of war between them and the reveal about what Brock is up to.
Yeah.
What he wants to do.
Yeah.
And they both like have kind of like, it's like they both have kind of... dirt on each other.
Yeah.
They're like, we have to work together.
Yep.
For various reasons. But we... And they're both kind of like trying to persuade each other to bend. And
yeah.
Neither of them are particularly the type to bend.
Yeah.
It was a really good first issue.
It is. It's really good. I'm shocked how much I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I think this is like, what was it? Well, like when All New Venom came out, it like blew out.
Yeah.
We've had to go through a few printings of this. I think this is going to blow out too. And it's a rare case where I'm like, this is a Carnage book that deserves it.
There's Marvel Mutts, which has art by...
The very opposite. This is a delightful comic.
Art by Takeshi Miyazawa. Basically, there is a new dog named Mittens, who I believe Ms. Marvel adopts. And Mittens has no powers, but because of Ms. Marvel, gets to meet up with Lockjaw and Lucky the Pizza Dog and Bats, Doctor Strange's dog, and Cosmo, the cosmonaut dog.
Yep.
And have doggy adventures. It's every bit as cute as it sounds. It's very much an all-ages kind of book.
Yep.
You definitely want to give this one a read.
There's even a devil dinosaur that shows up.
Oh, you're right.
Semi-related, they reprinted the two specials for It's Jeff.
It's Jeff, yeah.
The Jeff the Land Shark. Yep. You might know him from Marvel Rivals Marvel Snap or whatever. But in short, he's very adorable, and like I was just flipping through that, and the art is so good on all the different little stories in that. Again, super wholesome. Get it for your kids. Get it for anybody who likes cute stuff. He's very fun.
Jason Aaron has a new book from Image called Bug Wars, with art by Mahmoud Azrar, which is really nice.
Yeah, it really is. They worked previously together, I believe.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't remember where.
I don't remember where either.
Yeah, this one, Nick, you've been kind of keeping up like on this a little ways in advance because we got a preview issue of this months ago. And it is it's a fascinating thing. It's kind of, there's a few different modes, you know, we've seen Jason Aaron in over the years. He, of course, had a long run on Thor, and that's kind of his, like, Viking hero mode.
Yep.
He's been doing Ninja Turtles lately. He did a Batman sci-fi miniseries, so he's doing
Uncle
a lot of
Scrooge.
Stuff. But this is kind of a callback to almost like his harder-edged Vertigo days, while at the same time the concept is this big kind of fun idea of the backyard bug wars. And kind of like, as like a fantasy thing. Like, it's not just bugs. It's like there's these kingdoms of bug-like humans.
He describes it as Honey, I Shrunk the Kids by way of Game of Thrones.
Right.
And it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. It is like these...
It's a little over the top. A
little over the top. And I appreciated that over the topness because...
It comes with an R rating.
It does.
I'm going to say.
The bugs are...
It's sweary.
It's sweary, violent. People get their heads cut off.
Yep.
Their
heads like exploded.
Yep.
Impaled on giant beetle horns.
If you like the violence in, say, Invincible, this is akin to that. But a little funnier.
Right. There is a dark sense of humor to it at times.
But there's also...
And there's a meta story.
There's a meta story in there. There's a kind of about sibling rivalry, death.
But to say this, that is from actual, like, normal humans living in a house nearby. That one of whom will eventually, like, something happens where he's going to be kind of shrunk down, I guess.
Yeah.
That Honey, I Shrunk the Kids by way of Garth Ennis, which is something else he described it as.
Yep.
And he's going to have to engage with this. This kingdom of warring insects that, like, the backyard is, like, their continent.
Yeah.
And they,
There's some fun ideas mixed.
Well, like, he's doing the same level of world-building he did in, what, Randy Namor recently?
Yep.
Certainly that he did in his Thor run, where he's literally it has a map of the backyard in the back that's kind of like, you know, like a fantasy novel map kind of thing. And, like... The neighbor's yard is like the far forbidden lands and stuff like that. Because, you know, just like crossing yard is like hundreds of miles for them.
But they have to deal with things like the lawnmower, which they have a name for.
Yep.
And there's just a level of detail. He does a lot of world building in a single issue.
Yeah.
There's a lot here. I think the characters are interesting. Even if, like...
There's a dysfunctional family going on. A single mom, I think, and her two sons who are kind of... Neither of them seem particularly well-adjusted, but one of them is particularly poorly adjusted.
Well, mentally scarred by something that happened to him in his childhood.
Right, and it happened to have something to do with bugs.
Yeah, so there's
a lot... And then the other one is like a bug nerd.
Yeah.
Kind of, because their dad was like an entomologist.
Entomologist,
is that what you call it?
I honestly, this was one of my favorite reads this week. It was
a
lot of fun, but I kind of just hit all of the buttons I was needing.
I'll say I found it a little, I'm going to say slightly edgelord at times, But it's kind of edgelord in a sort of fun and knowing way. And so, and especially because of all the lore, and because I think the characters are pretty well drawn in it.
But I read it, and then you were like, did you read the afterword by Aaron? And I was like, no, I didn't. And you were like, you should read that. And it was kind of a neat little insight into just who he is and how he grew up and where he came from.
Yep.
That he's putting a lot of it into the story.
Yeah, I usually like reading those afterwards from the creator where they talk about their passion for the project, because it really comes through. And, it's sort of... Although, I don't know if this is quite the mode that's, like... It's not my favorite Jason Aaron mode, but I was like, I kind of dug that at the end, and I do think people should try it out.
Yeah. It was good.
Image also has a book called The Hive, which is kind of a weird... espionage type thing with a hive mind aspect to
it. It's like a little bit of a heisty thing too, I think.
And a Creepshow in Love, a one shot with they've been doing these holiday themed creep shows, short stories, but notably this has a Mirka Andolfo story, and also a Patrick Horvath story, which the name you
that's the Beneath the Trees
person, which
good to see weird book of last year.
Good to see that dude getting some more work. DC has Green Lantern Corps number one, a new Green Lantern book that has all the Green Lanterns except for Hal in it.
I wasn't quite sure if Hal will like maybe show up, but like everybody else is in there. Guy Gardner.
Well, it's interesting. Jessica Cruz and her former partner.
Oh my gosh, what is that guy's name?
I don't remember his name either. I'm blanking on it. Simon Baz. Jessica has become sort of like a captain.
She's like the captain. She's got like the eye for detail.
What's interesting is like because the thing that makes it interesting about this setup is that they're doing a little more. They call it Precinct Prime. They're doing a little more of them as like intergalactic cops,
right?
But also, there are no Guardians anymore,
right? And I think what had been happening, you know, what little I know of DC's kind of cosmic lore lately was that there had been like a Federation that had been forming and kind of taken over from them.
Yeah.
But something happened where the Federation is now in a state of distress or collapse,
right?
And so they're kind of having to up their game as their own entity.
The Lanterns are kind of running their own thing, which is the first time it's ever happened.
And it does vibe more like a big sprawling police precinct, which is I think kind of a cool thing. Also, by the way, really good art.
Really nice art.
Another case of really good art. So, if you're looking for a Green Lantern jumping on point, what is it actually just called? Green Lantern Corps.
Green Lantern Corps.
Number one.
Yep.
There's an interesting character rejoining,
and there is a surprise guest appearance by somebody on the last page, looking really incredibly cool. I have to say.
Yeah,
who has a history.
Not familiar with Fernando Pessoa, but his art is quite nice.
Yeah. And also, what else? What's her name from? What's the other Green Lantern project you read?
Joe Mullen
from, what do they call it? Far Sector.
Far Sector. Yeah.
I'm glad to see her getting more.
Yeah, she's basically awesome. As established as everybody else. Even though that series was a little kind of off to the side when it began.
DC versus Vampires World War V has a one shot called Darkness and Light, which is Alfred Green Lantern and Vampire Wonder Woman.
You made it sound like that's his name, Alfred Green Lantern.
I mean, it's basically his name. Then Dark Horse is in number one. Star Wars Hyper... This may be the longest title outside of a James Tynion book.
Hit it.
Star Wars Hyperspace Stories, The Bad Batch - Ghost Agents.
I love a good, awkward title.
If you're missing The Bad Batch, this is a five-part miniseries where The Bad Batch continues on. They are now working for Mace Windu.
I didn't know that was a thing that happened.
It's a flashback. Is it a flashback?
Was that a thing that happened?
This is during the Clone Wars.
During the Clone Wars.
Yeah, so this is prior to the show, because the show starts with them being... Yeah.
Right, no, I'm just asking, is that something the show ever alluded to, or is this kind of a something?
No, I think this is new.
It's new.
That sounds fun.
So what's interesting, though, the story is that the list of ghost agents that the Republic uses has gotten out in public... And the Bad Batch needs to track it down before it gets in the hands of some bad people who know who the ghost agents are. And if you're thinking, hey, that sounds like Mission Impossible, that is because it is 100% the plot of Mission Impossible. And I think the writer maybe didn't think people would notice, but I noticed, sir.
Do they call it a knock list?
They don't call it the knock list.
Well, not to be fair,
the knock list.
It's also literally going on in our real world.
Yeah, that's less fun. That's less fun.
Less fun, but I'm just saying...
Stop bringing reality into this.
No, I'm just like, you have to give a little bit of a break if it's based in reality and could actually happen.
anyway, more Bad Batch if you want Bad Batch. Some of my favorite books got new issues. Moon Knight Fisher Khonshu, All New Venom. Weird to call that one of my favorite books.
Oh, that's where we are.
X-Men number 11, Dave and
By the way, Madame Mask gets to do some cool stuff in this, and that guy draws her so cool.
Yeah. They did not reveal who Venom is yet.
No.
In Which fact, means that all our theories are still in play.
It's kind of funny how they mess with the reader.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'll, like, somebody will trot out his theory or somebody else's theory. And I do feel like it has to be some kind of Agatha Christie type reveal that's like a novelty reveal. Yep. It's all of them, or it's none of them, or whatever.
It's the Marauder.
Or it's the Marauder from Team America. Please see previous episode for full explanation.
Dave, there's a bit in here where it's like some guy is, it's Chance, the mercenary Chance.
Yes.
By the way, great callback.
Oh, yeah, that goes back to the people who know the Michelinie and McFarlane era, when McFarlane was just debuting, where call a cover with
that Chance.
That
guy had a cool look and a cool gimmick.
It is cool, but although I can't remember quite what his gimmick is.
He uses, like, randomized blasters, so he kind of would compensate for the spider sense.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah.
Anyway, he is blasting away the Venom symbiote, and he's like, well, if you were... What does he say? Rick Jones? Whoever's... Luke Cage. That would have hit you in the head. So you're not Luke Cage. Then he's like, you must be Madame Mask. And then Madame Mask shows up. He's like, not me. Like, they're definitely
they're
playing
messing
with
them. Yeah.
Yeah. X-Men number 11. Dave, you and I really liked the previous issue of this.
Yeah, I did too.
And, you liked that one as well?
Yeah, I loved it.
And I thought this was another good issue.
It was. He calls back some very cool stuff, I'm going to say, from the 80s.
Yep.
And but he also does, I think, the very cool thing of playing ball with there's story elements that trickle through from the what did we call the previous era? What was the island thing? Krakoa era.
Yeah.
But you know what? Some of the fun stuff in this, I can only call it a bro friendship between Magic and Juggernaut.
Yeah,
I love it.
Where they're like, how hard are we hitting here? And she's like, the only way, you know, always as hard as we can, you know, they are pumping each other up.
The new friendships and kind of blossoming out of all this, and even making Quentin Quire likable.
Yeah, there's a great bit with Quentin Quire, and Quentin Quire is piloting the jet because it requires a telepath.
Yes.
And Psylocke is sitting next to him, and he says, oh my god, they're making me feel like I'm taking crazy pills, Psylocke. And she says, I've actually been slipping you crazy pills while you sleep. That and arsenic.
His response is like, oh, it all
makes
sense.
Well, now that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some fun bits of dialogue. McKay's dialogue is great, as always.
It is.
The action is really good.
There's a cool new sort of storyline forming up in this that has some neat twists and turns by the end, a reveal of a classic X-Men ally type character.
Yep.
I thought seeing Temper get to kind of unleash a little bit with her mutant abilities was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I can't say too much else without spoiling some of the big appearances, but they are some things that I really like.
Yep, for sure. I think, Dave, the gripe we both have is their X-Plane should look cooler.
I agree. It's something from the Krakoa era. They have it for, I think it's Kitty's old,
not
her
seagoing
vessel, or maybe it is, but it's airborne.
But Quire stole it.
It looks like a big train.
And Cyclops is like, he's like, what do you think's going to happen when Kitty finds out that you stole that? And I forget what he says, but it's something like, he's like, this is like a maritime law. It's like, you know, we have it, we found it, so we get to keep it.
There was also new Transformers.
Yes.
I thought it was an exceptional issue that kind of brought some light into this war-torn world.
Yep.
You
get to see, what does it call it, Blue Streak going to rescue, who is it, the teleporting plane, the Seeker?
Thundercracker.
Blue Streak is a Transformer. Yeah, so Thundercracker, normally a bad
who's
guy,
basically
but we know he's got some sympathies, and he's not
Earthlings.
He's not a monster.
No.
Yep.
But he does know his bro, Skywarp, has been like held by the Autobots for a while, and he goes, like, it opens with him going to rescue him.
Thought there was a good conversation between Beachcomber and RC.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good conversation about why Beachcomber is the way he is.
Interesting bout of madness for a certain Transformer who has constructed something crazy.
Yep. We get to see one of the other Seekers show up that we haven't seen before.
As well as the sort of potential toll of a battle between, what is it, Bruticus and
Devastator.
Devastator on, Seattle. yeah.
And also a maybe new Transformer.
I was going to ask if this character is new, because I certainly don't know him.
Well, you know the alt vehicle, what it is, right? Okay, we'll talk later, the alt vehicle is actually an important piece of information.
Yeah, let's talk off mic about this one.
All right. We got the second issues of Aquaman and New Champions.
Yep.
What I think might be, it says the end, but I thought this was an ongoing series of Star Trek Lower Decks.
So it could be the end of a storyline, or it could be
just a four-issue miniseries, but
okay.
I thought this was an ongoing, but maybe not. Lucky Devils, we get a reprint of number one, and then the second issue, which is just as good as the first one.
This is
Charles Soule's.
So when he's not writing Carnage, he has a cool indie comic from Image.
Yep.
Charles Soule and Ryan Brown, who have done Astronauts in Trouble and Curse Words and... Not Astronauts in Trouble. Some astronaut book, but...
8 Billion Genies.
8 Billion Genies. Yep. They do great, fun, high concept. This is about a couple of devils who are... They're giving up on corrupting their people, and instead they're going to work with them to get them more power.
Yep.
And then overthrow the entire system of hell.
I like it.
It's really fun. If you missed the first issue, it's back in print this week. And we have number two.
I'm glad to see this one back.
We got a lot of new printings. New Gods, number one, from Rom V. Number two is getting a second printing in a couple weeks
this
as well.
This is a really good series I think more people should check out.
You said we got reprints of New Gods?
Yep.
Ah, that's right.
Number
that's
one.
Right.
Yep.
I have been really liking New Gods.
Too.
I will say this. I'm a person who... I love the original designs, and I enjoy the original issues, but I will say I don't usually love New Gods storylines.
No.
Most of them are just okay, some moments here and there. I like Cosmic Odyssey and a few other things. This is probably the best one that I've seen in, maybe decades?
Yeah, agreed.
It has really cool art. There's a little... It's a deeper cut, but it also the art is almost reflective of taking Kirby and bringing this kind of like almost like heavy metal quality or like that European detail.
Yeah.
When I say heavy metal, I'm not talking about necessarily that rock and roll style, but the detail of fantasy and sci-fi art in European comics.
Sure.
But Rom V also is a good high concept guy.
Yes.
We
talked about how there is both the high concept stuff, like with the Source Wall or on Apocalypse.
But then he grounds it in character moments.
And then it'll go to the relationship between Barda and Scott and Orion and Scott, and it's really interesting. So,
and then the birth of an actual new god that is the big story.
Probably, it's in my like top three or four DC books right now.
Yeah, agreed.
We've got reprints of two It's Jeff one shots.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we've got reprints of Absolute Superman number ones. We now have Absolute Superman 1 and 2 in stock.
Yep.
Three and four are currently out of print.
Sure.
And then Absolute Batman 1, 2, and 3 get a reprint. And number 5 came out this week.
It's another really good issue.
And number 4 is currently out of print. But eventually they'll get them all. We'll have them all in print. But if you missed any issues, some of them are available.
Yep, we're doing our best to get them in.
Yep. Did you all have any other single issues you want to mention before I talk about trades?
Yeah. I'm really enjoying Moon is Following Us. Number 6 hits this week.
The Moon is Following Us. That's Image, right?
That's Image. It's Daniel Warren Johnson and Riley Rosmos.
Right.
High concept dream. Escape book.
I need to look into that because I like Riley Rosmo's art, and a lot of people, of course, know what's his name, like
Daniel Warren Johnson
from his Transformers book right now. But he's he's usually got several irons in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will say the other book that I'm weirdly enjoying is the Deadpool Wolverine number 2 hits this week.
Yep.
The Ben Percy weirdly dealing with some Cable things, time travel, but. It's kind
sense.
Of bonkers.
Deadpool's got some cable links.
It's bonkers enough that I'm like, you have my attention.
Okay. The only other thing I was going to mention was Action Comics 1083. This is the one that's by, what's his name?
John Ridley. It's the second issue of his.
This is the one that I mentioned last time when issue came out. I think it's just a 3-issue storyline like they've been doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where... in this case, Superman had almost been... It was almost as if he was the sponsor for Major Disaster, sort of a mid-tier villain who actually has some kind of big powers, but... and he thought he was kind of trying to try... He was going to go on the straight and narrow, and then he tried to, like, rob a bank, and somebody got killed, and Superman is kind of brokenhearted about this, and he's pissed, and he's like, you know, can people be turned around at all? And that first issue was so good in showing all these conversations he had about it. And in this one, Clark is diving deeper into the mystery, and, like, Clark side of this plays a bigger role because it's like he's interviewing supervillain associates of Major Disaster. They're all kind of sort of mid-tier, but it goes into more of a mystery mode in this one, and it's there are some pretty cool reveals. An old Superman threat that goes back away, and I'm not quite sure. I don't know for sure I'll love where everything lands, but like there's been no major missteps and lots of interesting stuff in it. So a good second issue as well. We'll see how it wraps.
Couple notable trades this week. One is the Kill or Be Killed compendium, the big giant trade version of all of the Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. This is one of those, like, the homage to 70s vigilantes.
Yep, I think I've talked it up many times. It's one of my favorites from Brubaker. It's the one where there's a dude who's like, basically he's suicidal, and when he's like, I don't know, cut his wrist or taking the pills or whatever.
I think he jumps
off a off a building.
Oh, does he? Okay. Yep. He wants to live.
Yeah.
And, like, he sees this sort of dark spirit approach him and say, you know, I'll save you, but at a price. And it does save him.
Mm-hmm.
At a price. Only it says it wants, like, one life per month, I believe.
Yeah.
And so this guy who has, like, no fighting skills, no tactical skills at all, is like, I want to stay alive, and so I'm going to do this, but if I have to kill somebody, I'm like, well, maybe they should be bad people, you know, what, maybe I can make this work, sort of. And so there's that vigilante element to it, and then there is a little bit of a meta thing where he's like, wait, is this demon real, or is it because of, like, the meds I'm on, and I just saw some weird shit, which is such a cool and crazy premise. It's really intense and cool. Slight element of Death Note, but it's much like Brubaker said, it's more of tied into, like, 70s revenge movies, if anything. So this is just, is it all collected in one volume?
All
or
in one volume.
This is like one of their, like, Invincible compendiums.
Yeah, it was like a 20 issue series.
Yeah. And then the Young Avengers Epic Collection, which is notable because finally, the original 12-issue Young Avengers series that introduced all these characters is back in print.
This is the
Jim Chung and Alan Heinberg.
People have been looking for this off and on for years.
It's only available as, like, a giant $125 hardcover. Now there's a modern epic collection that collects the 12 issues, and I think, like, a little 2-issue thing they did afterwards.
It's a really good story.
We're frustrated it took so long, but it is a good story and recommended.
The art is exceptional.
Yeah, Jim Chung's art is great.
Jim Chung.
Somewhere in there, he wrote, he drew what I think is the best Kang ever.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm going to guess, I don't know, because I haven't seen, I've been trying to keep away from spoilers, that possibly Patriot might feature into the Cap movie that's coming out this. Because we know that his grandfather is in it.
Right.
4 days.
4 days.
Make it
two days.
Timely time to reprint.
I'm seeing it on Friday. You guys are seeing it on Friday.
Wow.
It was Keely's Valentine's to me.
Enjoy that extra day, Nick, having to wait. Apparently, I'm seeing online that the release date might have been Wednesday, so we might be seeing it not opening day as well.
We suck.
I'm terrified.
You should spoil it for us.
But anyway, yes, we will definitely be talking about the Captain America movie next week.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about a trailer and then some movies and the theater. And games. All right, so we got a couple trailers to talk about. I'm a little surprised the Super Bowl didn't provide us with more trailers.
I'll say this, by the way.
Smaller ones.
I haven't looked closely. There may be more that we're missing.
I mean, there was a new Mission Impossible.
But we've already talked about that as much as we want to.
I wouldn't have watched
the second one, except it came up right as we were watching it came up after the other one, and I wanted to watch it, and it turns out, really good trailer.
Yep.
I feel like, and I don't want to jinx anything, I feel like Marvel might be getting their feet back under them this year.
All right, do we want to say what we're talking about? Do we say what we're talking about?
No. All right. Let him guess.
Oh, interesting.
No, let's.
Randy, you're like such a puppet master.
You know, let's start
Randy
with.
Randy really liked that Dr. Doom.
Yeah, hashtag like, Team Doom.
He's like, now I am Doom.
Sure.
I have put up a force field around Rogues Gallery that no one can get through.
I was thinking our listeners might want to be in on what the fuck we're talking about.
No, let them guess. They can have universal health care.
Let the
and
peasants
education.
Guess. Doom is all.
Doom is all. The first one we're talking about is Jurassic World Rebirth.
Yes.
The trailer for... Y'all are both bigger Jurassic Park fans than I am.
Yes.
That's very true.
I kind of came back around to it after, like... I actually fell off the series as far back as Jurassic... Or Lost World, the second one.
Way Dave, you're a hater hipster.
The 90s, yeah. But then I would later, as the Jurassic World series kind of geared up the second trilogy... and they look to me, those were kind of they instead of trying to duplicate the epicness of the original, they started to have more fun. That kind of drew me back in, and so I rewatched all of them, and I was like, okay, if I chill my expectations out, these are all a pretty good time.
Jurassic World, the idea of it being like a big Disney World type thing,
it was a cool idea.
Like was interesting.
That was the first one, and then the second one basically got them to the point where they had a mission there, and the dinos got to the world, and then the third one was dinosaurs are in our world now. That's
exactly.
just
yep.
it.
Yep.
And they had to kind of fudge it. Like, how did they get everywhere? Why are you know, how could like there be? There seems like there's more species than there were that got loose.
You know.
But whatever. I enjoyed it kind of warts and all. So now here we come up on what's this one called?
Jurassic World Rebirth.
Jurassic World Rebirth. This is arguably third trilogy beginning.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah, I think so. They call it a whole new setting.
With one of their bigger things being that Scarlett Johansson, a more A-list person, well, they always have good character actors.
Yeah.
But like, it's kind of a big get for her.
Apparently, she's always wanted to do this.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, and I was like, "Is that just PR hype?"
It could
be. I think she's being serious. I think she just like I don't loves dinosaurs.
But I mean,
imprinted strong on Jurassic Park.
I mean, she was that age, right?
Yeah.
The two leads. I mean, Scarlett Johansson, and the other one is Mahershala Ali.
Yeah. Who's the other dude? The guy who's like their scientist bro.
So that guy is
somebody.
Is Jonathan Bailey?
I recognize
who was,
the name.
Who is the prince in Wicked?
Okay. And he was also in a show that people like.
He was like the kind of the smooth dude in Wicked. Okay,
but he basically, I guess, is a doctor that is in seek of basically stuff that will help mankind in like drugs.
We're talking about like cure for cancer. Kind
yeah,
of
those
stuff.
Kinds of things. But to get it, they need samples from three different
dinosaurs. And they happen to be. The worst of the worst.
Yes, and they're so they are going back to a place that has been revisited before, which is the, or at least I think this is the same one.
Isla Sorna?
Isla Sorna?
It's not the original?
No, well, they revealed that there was a second one where they basically did most of the breeding. Like, we saw John Hammond open, like, he was there when that raptor was born in the first one.
Okay.
But, like, that was, like, a small sampling there. Most of it was apparently done off-site on this other island.
Was this revealed in which Jurassic
Lost
Park?
World?
Yeah, second
Lost
one.
World?
Lost
okay.
World. That's where they went. That was Isla
Sorna. That was Lost World.
Sorna.
But now it's been long since abandoned, I guess, with dinosaurs kind of in the world. You get the impression that basically this is a no-fly zone. People don't go there. Literally, there's like super dangerous giant pteranodons, or whatever those dinosaurs are. I don't know what they are.
They keep changing names on us.
And but that's where they have to go. They're looking to get like DNA samples from them to you know like help with this kind of medical breakthroughs and stuff. And Scarlett Johansson, is she like a mercenary?
She's like a mercenary.
She's like a covert operative. Or like
security protection bodyguard type.
Right,
person.
Right.
And Mahershala Ali is like her driver, her operator buddy.
Yep.
And
yep.
they're going to go.
Pilot dude.
Yeah. And they go to this island and they have adventures.
Yep. And we get to see both dinosaurs, just glimpse dinosaurs we've seen and that we haven't seen, including some big. They're like they look like the Apatosauruses, but they have those super long tails.
Yep.
I have seen. I remember I had forgotten about them, but I have seen paintings of those things going back a ways.
Yeah.
So that is one of those. I forget what they're called, but that's a legit one.
Talosaurus.
Yes. Yes. I think you're right, Randy.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah.
I was kind of happy to see the old, the venomous one. What is it, a Dilophosaurus,
Dilophosaurus?
From the first Jurassic Park? Looks like one of those guys is going to show again. Big sequence with the Mosasaur. I guess is that like arguably like the largest dinosaur that there ever was?
I think so.
and working in concert somehow with some other dinosaurs, yeah. Like kind of like where they have like a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, he's like a boss dinosaur.
Right, boss they help and they underlings. They yeah, you know, just like there's lampreys on whales and stuff like that.
Have we seen ankylosaurs in Jurassic Park?
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Those are the ones with the noggins.
Spiky,
right?
The spiky.
No, there's ankylosaurus is the club tail. Yeah, we have because they were in the animation, of course.
Right, but, okay. Have they been in other ones? They must have, but I certainly can't remember.
Those are cool dinosaurs.
They are very cool.
There was one in the pretty good Camp Cretaceous show named that the kids named Bumpy.
Bumpy.
And early on, he's just this very cute little one, and then there's a time passage that happens, and the next time you see him, he's as big as a tank, and it was actually very cool. He helps save him from a big, like, not a Tyrannosaurus, but like a Carnosaur, or whatever you call those things.
Yeah.
And he does this thing where he, like, he's got that big club tail, and you know how, like, beavers whap their tails when they're upset, or rabbits do that? He does that with his big club tail, and it's like wham, wham, wham on the ground, like to like ward off the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Hmm. And it was one of those cool Jurassic Park moments where I'd never seen that envisioned before, that he would posture and threaten like that. And I was like, man, that was cool. And then he fucking hits him in the head with it too. But he does like these quick full body turns that the way they animated it was really cool.
Yes.
So yes, but I more ankylosaurs, I think, or ankylosaurs as they tend to call them lately.
Favorite dinosaur, Dave?
That's it. That's ankylosaurus. Yeah,
Nick.
Triceratops.
All right. Okay. I don't have a favorite dinosaur.
Basic shit. No, I'm just kidding. There is no wrong answer. In fact, into the best dinosaurs.
Yep.
What would be? Do you have like one that's kind of like that you like a little more than the others?
No, or? I just think dinosaurs are cool, man. I don't have a favorite.
I think that's also an acceptable answer. There is no wrong answer here.
All right. The other trailer, which I wasn't going to watch, so I'm a little worried about getting spoiled, but. I gave in, and I'm glad I did, the Thunderbolts trailer.
It's a fun new trailer.
It's a fun new trailer. The thing I hadn't realized till they did this trailer is about where Yelena is like, so none of us have powers, we all just punch and shoot things.
Yes.
And that basically this is putting this team of like ex-killers and special ops up against Superman.
Yeah.
Right. Now, here's my question, because I had forgotten that. Like, how well known is the threat that they are facing?
Not at all.
Do we even want to say what we know it is?
I think, well, maybe not, because they don't give away the trailer, but they show, like, this shadowy figure putting a shadow over all of Manhattan, and, like...
Let's just say it's bigger than they would normally be.
Yes.
You know, it'd be like if you had them going up against Magneto or something like that, and you're like, how?
Yep.
How?
Yeah.
But therein lies the challenge.
There's also just the character interaction, like what they've done with Bucky... And Winter Soldier version. They've turned that character something really interesting. Yelena is one of my favorite characters. Like, Florence Pugh is great in that.
She's good. She has a really good... There's a really good scene with her and David
Harbour's Red Guardian is another one we're super excited to see.
He's clearly going to be kind of like, I think, the energizing factor in almost any scene.
He's full of bluster. He definitely is full of bullshit. It's great.
Yeah. But actually the scene that she shows, what does she say?
She's like, that was really good. And she's like almost crying.
Right. Like he basically, he gives like a sort of a little bit of a rallying speech.
He gives the hero speech.
And it's actually pretty good and gets to her. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's
also there. John Walker is like, he's really good too.
I've liked John Walker. Yeah, you know, I liked him the whole time in the Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Wyatt Russell's a good actor.
It's funny because in the comics, U.S. Agent is kind of a broad-shouldered, big jerk kind of guy.
He's
like
a schmuck.
He's a little more Guy Gardner-y, a little more.
Yeah.
I think kind of worse.
Yeah,
in a lot of
he's
ways.
Basically just a right-wing jerk.
Yeah,
and the version they made here is a guy who's kind of just a little bit like a bit of a like he shouldn't be a loser, but he kind of is.
Right, and he's kind of knows he's always going to be in the shadow of Cap.
Yeah, yeah.
Where like kind of everybody wants to kind of I think. All the good people lift up Anthony Mackie, lift up Falcon to Cap, and recognizes that he's got that true heart of a hero, and they recognize that. And it's like this is the guy who they like, who didn't make the cut.
Yeah,
and like that's a hard thing to live with, but that makes me sympathize with him, and I like that, so I like him more because of
that. They're also bringing in Ghost from Ant-Man and Wasp, and Taskmaster from. So this is the follow up to a lot of projects that I think don't get the credit they deserve, like including the Black Widow movie.
Rewatch the Black Widow movie. It's good.
It's really good. Every time I rewatch it, I like it more.
Yeah.
The Falcon and Winter Soldier show. They're like, this is paying off a lot of that stuff.
Yep.
And I think in a really good way. I like this team. And then Nick spotted the Thunderbolts has had an asterisk left after it, and everybody was like, "Oh, that's not really the title of the movie. It's going to be like the Dark Avengers or something."
Right. But you're talking about the asterisk is specifically in the title.
In the title. It brings it up, and there's a little ding, and the asterisk appears.
Yeah.
And then Red Guardian makes a reference to them being the heroes on the Wheaties box, and they have now released a trailer that is a Wheaties box, or a teaser image that is a Wheaties box. And Nick is like, is that just the asterisk from Wheaties?
Yep.
And I think he's right. That's what it is.
Yep. Does Wheaties do that because they have a different person each time, or is it like just like a star, like these are superstars?
That's a good... I don't know.
Because it does kind of look like just like a little star.
I don't...
Is Wheaties the so-called Breakfast of Champions?
It is.
Yes.
Yep.
I don't know why...
Yeah, I don't know either. Maybe it'll be a bit more of a thing in the movie, and they'll explain it, but that definitely seems to be the
definitely
case.
It is
crazily a Wheaties tie-in.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Anyway, super psyched for this.
Yeah, I have to say that trailer looked good. It's exciting because we're about to go see
Cap, which has had several good trailers.
Yep, and then that'll be an energetic lead-in, hopefully, to this. Yeah. Just kind of like riding that Marvel wave.
And then Fantastic Four, which also looks great.
Man, yeah,
Marvel could get everybody back.
Yep, it'd be nice.
Yep, that'd be nice. We need it. We need it. All right. Let's talk about a movie that Nick saw. We talked about the trailer for this a while back. Nick bought it, and Nick always shares his login with us, so we can sometimes watch movies.
Yep.
And I watched it. Dave didn't get around to it, but Dave didn't
care. I'm going
to get
around to it, but I'm not too worried about some spoilers on this one, so y'all talk freely.
The movie is Wolfman, written and directed by Leigh Whannell, who is one of my go-to guys. He did Upgrade and the Insidious series and Invisible Man.
Yep. He might have also written the original Saw.
He did.
And the original Conjuring and maybe Conjuring 2. And
I really like Leigh Whannell stuff. And I was so excited to see him do it in the movie because Invisible Man was several years ago.
Yep. And Invisible Man was dope. I know we talked about it at the time. People should watch that.
This one is co-written with a guy named Corbett Tuck, who I think is maybe one of the race car drivers in Days of Thunder.
Oh, interesting.
It's not Cole Trickle.
But was a guy who wrote... He co-wrote on... And I think he... it's not a guy. It's a woman.
Okay.
Corbett Tuck. And she was in... She was in Insidious.
Oh.
This is the only thing she's written.
Okay, well, so where you might be leading with this broadly is that it's a messier project than he had before.
I think Corbett Tuck for everything.
And so Randy here is here to say that woke feminists have ruined Wolf movie.
No, never mind.
But y'all both told me it was kind of a messier affair than like the very, really quite good Invisible Man, where Randy liked it a little bit less and Nick liked it a little bit more.
I did. I thought it was a good movie. It's worth watching. It's an interesting...
Can y'all tell me just like the basic hook?
So the basic hook is a dad and his wife and his little girl.
Okay.
He's the stay-at-home dad. She is the lawyer, writer, journalist.
No, she's a journalist.
The journalist.
Okay.
And his dad has just died. His dad is like a hunter guy.
He's been declared dead.
They've been estranged for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, let's go up to the cabin for a little while. You can work on your book. We can get away from the city.
Kind of reconnect as a couple.
Because they're having trouble.
Solid start. I like this
so
far.
So they go up. It's creepy. They run into this other hunter guy who he knew as a kid. And they do open by showing like him and his dad like running into a wolfman during their hunting trip.
Oh.
And then they jump to like 15 years later, however many years later.
Like the lead character?
As a kid, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they go, and they're very quickly attacked by a wolfman.
Yep.
They see him on the road, he crashes his car, drags away the other hunter guy.
Yep.
And in the course of this, he scratches the lead guy. So the lead guy is turning into a werewolf.
Yep.
And that is kind of the movie. The movie's about...
At some point, they get to that cabin.
They're at his dad's old cabin. Some kind of monster is outside, and the dad is sick and transforming into a wolfman.
Is the monster his past?
Kind of, yes.
In fact,
exactly that, yes.
I'm familiar with A24 movies, which I know this is not, but...
But
definitely there's some themes. They're not too, like, they're very on the nose.
Sure.
And but I will say the execution of those themes often leads to some interesting things. I thought that opening scene with the kid and the dad is really well shot, well paced.
I just thought nothing went anywhere. Like, that opening scene is interesting and then it just ends.
Well, it sounds to me like at the very least it tells you that this werewolf doesn't just come out to attack this family this one time, that it's something that maybe is kind of known in these woods.
Yes. Not the same werewolf. Right?
Correct.
Right, but there's something about this place, maybe the curse.
I think there's elements of like a Wendigo in here.
Biggest gripe, they never really give us a reason for why there's a werewolf. Or explain.
Well, there's an opening quote that kind of definitely.
Sort of. I felt like I wanted a little more mythology to like how the werewolf, or some kind of rules.
You know what I want is I want that opening quote to be like, a werewolf divided against itself cannot stand.
Abraham Werewolf Lincoln.
Yes.
But it's also
Abraham Wolfman.
There's body horror here.
Yeah, you know how I love body horror.
I actually thought the body horror was interesting because their Wolfman is not a full kind of like wolf transformation. It is very kind of this weird wolf-human hybrid kind of thing.
I did not like the look of their wolf.
Oh, I did. I thought it was neat because it allowed the actor to still sort of express while still looking
I thought
moving.
It was a bad look.
Oh.
I
wholeheartedly disagree.
I think the thing I liked the most was as he is becoming more of a wolf man, he's hearing this distorted, he can't understand what she's saying, and he's speaking almost this garbled wolf language, and she can understand what he's saying. And when we see his point of view, they're sort of lit up, like their eyes are glowing, and he's like getting this...
Changing perceptions.
Yes, perceptions. Like, there's a bit where they show a spider.
Okay, so this is the allegory thing a little bit, where it's like, the divide between them as a married couple is writ large because he is wolfing it up.
Yeah.
But it's the, like I said, it's the execution of it. Like Randy was about to say, he hears like this weird scuttling from upstairs, and
it sounds like someone's like banging on the wall, and he finds it's like there's like a spider climbing, and he's hearing it tapping as it goes.
He's got super senses.
Super senses,
and that kind of continues on to the point where he's becoming full wolf, as opposed to he can't interact with human society anymore because he doesn't understand or he can't speak.
I think there's some really good ideas in there, but I think that they never all manifest. They never quite came through in a way I thought worked.
I thought it was pretty suspenseful at times. Let me
ask you, on Letterboxd, what'd you give it, Randy?
I give it 1.5.
Nick?
I gave it 3.
Okay. It's interesting. This is divisive enough that I now have to watch it.
Dave, you must
and
decide.
Tell you which one of you is right and which one must die.
Yes. I do think it is.
It's gonna be Nick's wrong.
So if you had to ask me, it is better than some of the Insidious sequels.
Okay.
Even though I still like those Insidious sequels.
Yeah, I do too. I like almost all of them.
It is not as good as, say, the first two Insidious or Upgrade or Invisible Man.
Right. Upgrade, by the way, is one that people should catch. That's like his sort of cyberpunk one.
Yeah, I like that.
But it's a guy who's got...
For me, this is the worst thing he's done. By a wide margin. I really did not like this. And I wish I'd liked it
better.
Did you
see all the Insidious sequels and stuff?
I think it's, what, 4 of them?
There's like 5.
I think there's 5.
Are there 5?
Yeah.
I mean, they all have the cool old woman in them, and therefore they're all cool.
I mean, that's true. But Dave, definitely, I think you should catch it.
Yeah, you should catch it. Yeah, I'll check it out. Which one of us is right.
Right. So when we are podcasting next week, only one of you will be here.
Yes.
The other person will be
will be messily devoured by a werewolf on mic.
We're going to put them in an oubliette.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, that's right.
Fancy.
Yes. Ooh la la bliette.
Ooh la la bliette. A fancy bliette.
Not just a standard bliette.
No. A standard bliette.
This is ridiculous.
Anyway, Dave, speaking of fancy.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about your experience at the theater?
Oh, yes. As we know, I'm now a theater-going patron. And I go to such a sophisticated fare as Clue.
Yes.
Which you also went to, by the way.
Look, all I know is you've been to the theater 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I know. But so this one was one... This is a little bit of one of my sort of holy grails that I wanted to see live at some point. In part just to shut up the people who told me that the movie just couldn't compare. Because, you know, the movie was my entry point, and what yep. I'm talking about is Les Miserables. The frequently known as Les Mis.
Yep.
This is based. This is the famous musical that came around in the mid '80s and became like the longest running musical ever, or maybe second longest now. And was based on the Victor Hugo book. He's the, also mm-hmm. the guy who wrote The Hunchback. And the book is this this kind of very big melodrama that spans decades that follows a good man wrongly imprisoned trying to set his life straight and the way all the other people his life interacts with in sort of revolutionary France. Big tragedies, but also big, moments of salvation or forgiveness. All kinds of big emotions go into this. Let me quick ask, have you guys seen any versions?
I saw an hour and a half of the 12-hour movie.
Now, are we talking about the musical or are we talking about, like, because there have been, like, a million
versions. The musical, the Hugh Jackman one.
All right, yeah, Nick?
I've seen that one.
Okay, anything else?
No, I have not. It's one I want to see, but it's one of those that I just haven't...
I rapidly discovered it was not for me. But I know for a lot of people it is, like, super great.
Yeah, Randy's a little weak person.
I am.
More Javert than Valjean.
I was going to say, Russell Crowe was Javert, right?
He was.
He was great.
Yeah, Jean Valjean is the hero of this, a guy who's just gotten through serving about 20 years. And by the way, this is a new touring production that's been, just as I kind of browsed around, very well received overall, mm-hmm. With, you know, like a few little criticisms that I'll bring up in a second that I think are somewhat fair. What was I going to say? I saw this at Bass Concert Hall.
Yep.
In Austin. Saw with my sister, who managed to get like literally every seat in the orchestra level was all purchased. She found two. We couldn't sit together, but that's okay. I don't like my sister that much, and we were like we can talk afterwards. But there actually were like quite good seats, other than like we were a little off to the side. So just every once in a while, I couldn't see like all of the action perfectly, but I would rather be close and have a little bit of loss of vision than, you know, in the nosebleed seats and not be able to see faces and stuff. So it was actually very good seats. I always liked the movie, which was my first exposure to it. I think that was in like 2016 or 2015 or something like that. That had Hugh Jackman in it in the lead as Jean Valjean, the sort of heroic type. And Russell Crowe was Javert, who's like he embodies like the law without any like sense of real attempt for justice. He is just letter of the law. Yeah. He's cruel. He hounds Valjean his whole life.
He's lawful neutral.
He's
or perhaps lawful evil.
Yeah, I'd almost say that he's a cruel bastard. But it's hard to watch this without at least having some sympathy for him after you hear a few of his very heartfelt songs, like where he'll like sing about how the alignment of the stars reflects, you know, the eternal unchanging stars are like vital to him. And so he can't understand at times when he's shown mercy from Valjean, because he would never have given him mercy. And so it like breaks him to see a person who's better than him. And it's a pretty satisfying to see it happen, to be honest. Along the way, among the people who get pulled into this web, there's the character who was Anne Hathaway in the movie, Fantine, mm-hmm. Who is a woman whose child he'll, you know, Valjean will end up raising. She was, you know, a person who was like working at like a garment factory and who lost her job. She had a husband who ran out on her, left her with a kid, and she, to support the kid, will like turn to prostitution. She will sell her hair and her teeth. That's how grim this gets at times. And she gets like one of the most famous grim songs of all time, mm-hmm. in it, which I suddenly can't remember the name of. Maybe one of y'all could remind me.
Oh man, I don't remember. Master of the House is the only one that I can go right to.
So let's quick mention that the girl, her daughter, Cosette, was raised, in fact, I kind of forget some of the details until I saw this again, by The Thénardiers, a scheming con type of couple who mm-hmm. run an inn, and later on they actually do some other stuff. They're like part of bandits who are looting the revolutionaries and stuff. The bodies on the field. They're super terrible people, and yet they get the most entertaining song of the whole production. The only really fun one in it. Like everything else is some stripe of tragic or very melodramatic. But Master of the House is an incredibly fun song. Oh my God! The line that the wife has in it at some point is like, God, what is it? Something like thinks he's a modern like Voltaire, thinks he's quite a lover, but there's not much there. Like they're like he's very in, you know, it's all about his ego while she kind of like uses it to deflate him, but they're for skeevy people, they are audience favorites, and like when everybody came out for their curtain call at the end, they get huge applause because super fun.
Dave, how was the production values? I assume it's amazing, but like any particular things that jumped out at you?
So they had like it wasn't actually like as elaborate as I remember like when I saw Wicked and there's like people flying and shit.
Yeah, for sure.
There is the big showpiece. They did have like these kind of move, you know, sort of backgrounds that would move in and slide in, and they were very nice looking. They occasionally had projections on the back in the beginning when Valjean is shortly to be released from prison. He's in like a rowing in a ship, and they're kind of like doing the basically slave labor rowing.
Yeah.
And they projected like water splashes onto the curtains behind them that looked really cool and like really kind of gave you the vibe and the darkness of them being in a ship's hold. So that was very cool. The centerpiece, though, and you know, like they're pretty elaborate in most of the other things. Like they do have a lot of nice staging. But the centerpiece is the barricade. The barricade is kind of where the rebels sort of make their last doomed stand mm-hmm. near the end of it against these sort of, forces of the law, the sort of unjust law of the time. And it's this big kind of tall wooden barricade that they climb up on, they shoot guns from, they tend to the wounded on, and the way they lit it with these kind of like this bright light that would come down made it look like sort of Renaissance paintings, or you know, like where you know God parts the heavens and comes down. And by the way, there was a little bit of GCC stuff in this because Valjean is like saved by a bishop early on and shown some mercy.
Okay.
And normally that wouldn't be my thing, but because it's like Victor Hugo was like so progressive, he was so sympathetic to people who were poor, who had been trod upon by the law, that he feels very modern, and so and that the bishop in this is would be nowadays, well, he'd be the kind of person who remember that awesome bishop chick who told off Trump right in front of his face
with bishop buddy.
Who dared to speak actual Christian values.
Yeah,
that's who the bishop is who saves Valjean is exactly okay. like that. Sorry. And so there's you will find things that that will connect to the modern world for sure. Anyway, great production. The criticisms I would throw out there are, if you do not know the story, it's not that it's super complex, but there's a lot of moving parts in it. And if you don't know, there's a few time jumps, and if you don't know the deal, it would be a little bit rough going into this first. I would actually say, like, watch the movie or something as a, like a primer, then see some live production, this particular live production. Other criticism, every once in a while there was some lyrics that were lost in the music and all of the rest of it. I don't know, have you guys seen many like musicals live?
Not a lot. I've seen like a handful. Like
I was just wondering, would you say that like you can always like most of the time you can make out all the lyrics?
No. Absolutely not.
I was thinking, I was like, oh, I'm kind of glad, like I say, that I saw Hamilton was the filmed version of the production that they showed on Disney Plus first, and then if I then saw it live afterwards, oh, I'd have a great time. But if I saw it the first time in the theater, I feel like I'd lose a lot.
Yeah.
And I think this is had a bit of that, too. So again, I would say, like, you know, I've watched also, like, lots of YouTube videos of, like, sort of the best of actors singing the music and stuff from it, but without the full play. And so I knew most of this stuff pretty well, but you know, if you didn't, you might lose a bit.
I don't want to get on a rant again here, but let me just once again say,
all right, yeah,
Can they please fucking put videotape versions of musicals and Broadway on some kind of service? What is the virtue of making all this stuff so hard to get to?
Because there is that the theater, I think, even more than, like, say, film. You know, you remember after the pandemic,
yep.
There were all those testimonial videos with Nicole Kidman, like, thank you for coming back to the theater.
Yes.
The one and only place you could ever enjoy a movie. You know, like, they were almost ridiculous.
Yeah.
I did, of course, grow up with theaters, and, like, you know, home theaters are not as big a thing for me. I still like that experience of going into, like, a, you know, an area with, like, a bunch of people in the dark and having this shared experience. And theater is, like, the even more intense version.
No, and I'm not saying we should get rid of theater. I'm just saying it's really hard. Like, you were just talking about the accessibility aspect of it. There's something a little ableist about theater only being accessible if you're someone who can afford the tickets, get into an uncomfortable seat for hours at a time. I feel like...
Listen, Bass Concert Hall seats are not bad.
I was going to say, Bass has...
They're not cheap.
Oh, they're not cheap, but I'm talking, like, physically, they're some of the better ones.
They're okay.
Now, that said, I do think it's actually productions like this, I think in the big picture of things, that have made it harder.
Yeah.
These productions like this, or Rent, or Wicked, or, you know, all those big ones, they end up costing hundreds of dollars, and Broadway has kind of built up this machine where it is kind of like... It's a thing you save up for, you that you hope to go to once in your life or once or twice to see Wicked.
I'm just saying, you could have, if someone basically bought a Broadway pass or something from a theater.
Yeah.
Like, all the money goes into the theater.
Yeah.
And then they get to watch the thing after the run has stopped or after... you know, you can make it accessible to people.
Randy, this run went for like 40 years.
Yeah, well, whatever.
You gotta wait.
After a year.
No, you have to wait.
You give them a time.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. And I think that, like,
I just wish there was some interest from them in doing this.
People who do smaller theater stuff, like all those actors and directors, I think they sometimes, I think, don't feel great about big productions like Les Mis and Cats and all the rest of those because I think they're like, well, it's turned it into this kind of showy affair that costs money and makes it feel more elite than it should because they just want you to, like, come out and see their stories.
So
they should probably do that.
I mean, just like, there are stories that never, if they don't get a movie adaptation, we never see them.
Yeah. Right.
And it's a shame because there's stuff I'd really like to see.
Yeah. Anyway. I agree. We should, you know what, also? We should bring back sneaking into theaters.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, I want to talk about a couple board games I played this weekend and have been playing. We just got this in the Clank Legacy 2.
Yep.
I forget,
are you doing Clank Legacy?
I'm doing both.
Oh.
I am playing Clank Legacy. I jumped in somebody else's game, like game 5, replacing somebody. And I played like 2 of that game.
Uh-huh.
Clank Legacy 2 takes place in the same world, but it doesn't, like, have spoilers for Clank Legacy 1 or anything like that.
That's a whole lot of clanking going on.
There's a lot of clanking going on. Clank is a great game. Yeah. It is a deck builder, but also a push-your-luck game.
Because you guys, like, who are, like, down in a dungeon delving to, like, get out with treasure.
You're trying to get artifacts, and there's a dragon that is attacking every now and then. And if you get an artifact, the dragon gets angry and the attacks get worse.
Yep.
So you have
Am I correct that the clank of the title is like the clank that you might be making?
It's the noise you make, and then it's like represented by cubes of your color. And the cubes go into a bag, and when there is a dragon attack, you draw a certain number of cubes out. And if you get your color cube, you take damage.
Okay.
So basically, it's a deck building because you are building your deck of, like, companions and weapons and all this kind of stuff.
Huh.
And that's how you move. That's how you buy more stuff, and that's how you attack other things in the dungeon.
Like, what would be one of the companions?
I'm trying to remember. Like, there's a dwarf or something? There's a henchman.
Okay.
The thing about Clank Legacy, it is based around Acquisitions Incorporated, which was the first actual play.
Right.
On the official D&D podcast.
An actual play D&D game. Yeah, kind of. It had to walk so that Critical Role could run.
Yeah. So this was by the guys who did Penny Arcade.
Yep.
And the guy who did PvP.
Yep.
And
I listened to some of those. It was fun.
It's a lot of fun. So basically, Acquisitions Incorporated is a corporate D&D organization, and you work for them.
Yep.
So Treasure Finders
Incorporated,
yes.
Kind of.
So there's some corporate gags in there.
Yep.
One of the cards I got is called Weekend Work, and it's a It's an orc dressed in Bill Lundberg from Office Space doing a sort of like, well, I need you to come in on Saturday. And the way that, when you play that card, the next turn you get to draw 7 cards instead of 5.
Yeah.
So you buy that, you put in your deck. So you're building decks.
Yep.
And then as you go along in this one, you're also like, you're putting stickers on the board, you're destroying cards, you have what's called, I forget what they're, they're not called mission statements, but there's like, you basically have little quests that you try to do each game. And you're trying to, like, find things. So you read from this book of, like, encounters and that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah,
and you are, like, in the latest game, there was, like, a frost dragon and, like, put a bunch of stickers and added a frost mechanic and this kind of stuff.
I think, you know, I'm sure we've talked about legacy games before, but just in the chance that, like, people there out there don't remember, this is a game that you... These are games where you play and the story builds with each play.
Yep.
And you're going to probably end up playing between, like, 12 and 20 times, depending on the game. But it's like, every time things will change, your characters could change. In some of the legacy games, you could even get killed. And you will often, like, mark up the board or destroy cards. And it's going to make your brain scream a little bit at first
when
you
get used to
it. But it's like, when you have completed it, you're like, I have had this unique experience that only I will ever have. Even somebody playing another legacy game is not going to do the same things you do. Yeah.
In fact, one of the people in my group is playing it with his household.
Yeah.
So he's playing both. He's playing the game twice.
Oh, interesting.
And it's been different every time.
Yeah. And so, the Clank seems like, you know, like the sort of dungeon delving sounds like a fun idea to do as an expanding thing with, yeah, like you said, like now... You've played a number of games, and now suddenly there's this Frost Dragon thing, and it's like probably like when we played Pandemic Legacy, it changes the rules a little bit. And well, so you get to like, it's not, it makes the game more interesting, too.
And in Clank Legacy 2, everybody has a booklet. There are 4 characters who have their own stories. So you're reading aspects of their stories as you go along. My guy is the Vengeful, I think.
Uh-huh.
And he is like, I always read in a gravelly voice like he's a Batman type character.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
one of these guys seeking vengeance for his murdered lover.
Sure.
And there's like a princess... And it's a lot of fun. The story's a lot of fun. We crack up every time playing it.
Yep.
A lot of cool mechanics. They add new mechanics as you go. It may be my favorite Legacy game I've played.
Yeah.
I would definitely recommend it. And the nice thing is, you don't have to play Clank Legacy 1 to play Legacy 2. You can play both.
Yeah.
There's no continuation. You don't continue from Legacy 1 into Legacy 2. But I would recommend it. I'm really enjoying Legacy 1. I'm really enjoying Legacy 2. Legacy 2 just hit.
Right, and we should probably say that the Rogues Gallery carries the full line of Clank products.
We do.
So should you just want to try basic Clank, you can do that.
Yep.
There's also lots of cool expansions for that. But yeah, if you've been already clanking it up,
yep.
or if you just want to clank into a Legacy game, you could just clank, get that clanker clanking and... and get the thing Randy's talking
enough.
About.
Okay. Anyway, recommend it. Clank Legacy 2. I also played a game called Harmonies that I've been meaning to play for a little while.
Harmonies?
Harmonies.
Okay.
So this is actually not about music or anything. You are the theme of it is you are building landscapes to create habitats for animals. But the way it works is everybody has a board that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 25 spaces on it.
Okay.
And you have these little circular tokens that go up on a main board. And the tokens represent water, cities, woods, I think there's like sun, and mountains. And you place these tokens, you get a group of 3, and then you place those tokens on your board, and the configurations will give you points. Like you want the light, whatever the light is, you want pairs of 2.
Okay.
Whatever the mountains are, the more you have, they're worth points, and if they're higher, they're worth points, but you gotta have at least 2 together or they're worth nothing. The water is the longest continuing line you have, is worth certain points at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there are cards you get that are specific configurations that are more points. So, like, you might get one that's like, put 2 forests next to a sun. And when you do that, you get 6 points. If you do it twice, you get 9 points.
Okay.
You can have 4 cards at a time, and then until you've done them, that you're locked until you get them done. And so, you basically are like, it's a pretty quick game because you just like you take 3 tokens, they refill the board, it goes around. It's got a little bit of that Azul kind of thing where you're like placing tiles. There's definitely some pattern matching to it. It's a really simple and elegant game, and I think there's a lot of like I can see a lot of practice to it. Like you're like, oh, I now I know how to do this, and I would play it differently next time.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of love when games pull that off where you're kind of excited to try it again because you're like, oh, I could make some moves next time.
I really, really enjoy this. I'm looking forward to playing it again. And like I say, it's a pretty quick runtime.
Yeah, you were just
30 to 45 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Really quick. This is one we've been selling regularly. Like I swear we sell a copy every week.
We do.
And so I recommend it, and I think you can play it with kids. It says basically 10 and up.
Okay.
But you could play this with younger kids, I think, a little bit. It's very pretty. It's a really pretty game. It's a really simple game, and it's a relatively cheap game.
You said thematically it is like is this the animal habitat
thing?
Which is a cool setting theme.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I would definitely recommend it, and like I say, it's definitely one we sell a fair amount of. So, all right, I think that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time, Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.